Translation. The word Brahman indicates the complete supreme personality of Godhead, who is Sri Krishna. That is the verdict of all Vedic literature. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15, where the Lord says, Vaidaishcha sarveya aham eva vedya. The ultimate object in all Vedic literature is Krishna. Everyone is searching for him. This is also confirmed elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7:19. Ahunam jamanam ante jnanavam amprapadite vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sadurlava. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. When one has actually become wise through the study of Vedic literature, he surrenders unto Vasudeva, Bhagavan Sri Krishna. This is also confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 7 and 8. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janya Yashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayeda Hoitakam Dharma Sunishtita Pungsam Vishrakshayu Kitasuya Mapari Yad Yadi Ritim Shrama Eva Ikevalam. Understanding Vasudeva is real knowledge. By engaging in the devotional service of Vasudeva, Krishna, one acquires perfect knowledge and Vedic understanding. Thus one becomes detached from the material world. This is the perfection of human life. Although one may perfectly follow religious rituals and ceremonies, he is simply wasting his time, shrama eva hi kevalam, if he does not attain this perfection. Before the creation of the cosmic manifestation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead possessed his totally transcendental mind and eyes. That Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna. A person may think that there is no direct statement about Krishna in the Upanishads, but the fact is that the Vedic mantras cannot be understood by people with mundane senses. As stated in the Padma Purana, Atakshi Krishna Namadi Nabaved Krayam Indriyai, a person with mundane senses cannot fully understand the name, qualities, form and pastimes of Sri Krishna. The Puranas are therefore meant to explain and supplement Vedic knowledge. The great sages present the Puranas in order to make the Vedic mantras understandable for common men. Stri Shudra Dvija Bandhunam. Considering that women, Shudras and Dvija Bandhus, unworthy sons of the twice-born, cannot understand the Vedic mantras or hymns directly. Srila Vasudeva compiled the Mahabharata. Actually, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Vedeshu Durlabham, untraceable in the Vedas. But when the Vedas are properly understood, or when Vedic knowledge is received from devotees, one can understand that all Vedic knowledge leads to Sri Krishna. The Brahma Sutra 113 confirms this fact also, Shastra Yonatvat. Commenting on upon this Brahma Sutra aphorism, Sri Madhavacharya says, the Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda, Mahabharata, Pancharatra, and the original Valmiki Ramayana are all Vedic literatures. Any literature following the conclusive statements of these Vedic literatures is also to be considered Vedic literature. That literature which does not conform to Vedic literature is simply misleading. Therefore, when reading Vedic literature, we must take the path traversed by great acharyas, Mahajano Yenigata Sapanta. Unless one follows the path traversed by great acharyas, he cannot understand the real purport of the Vedas. Brahma Shabde Kahe Purna Swayam Bhagavan, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna Shastrera Praman. Translation again. The word Brahman indicates the complete supreme personality of Godhead, who is Sri Krishna. That is the verdict of all Vedic literature. Hare Krishna. Vishnu Hare Krishna Prasthai Vutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminit Nami Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharni Nibhishesha Srinivati Prasthyati Desha Dharani. Hare Krishna. So, Lord Chaitanya is starting to make his reply to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And just to recap where we are with this, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya has invited Lord Chaitanya to hear a rendition of an explanation of Vedanta Sutra according to his understanding, which is part of the impersonal tradition. And for 7 days, Lord Chaitanya has simply listened but not replied. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is getting a little agitated. He thought, well, look, I'm giving you this great knowledge, you know, but you haven't said anything. You haven't agreed, disagreed, and you haven't even asked any questions. Surely, you know, this is something of interest and importance for you. And Lord Chaitanya is very gently kind of rebuked him, saying, well, yeah, actually, I do understand the sutras of Vedanta, and actually they're pretty clear, but I'm really troubled and agitated by your explanations because you seem to be obscuring them. You seem to be kind of giving different indirect meanings and hiding the very clear message that is there in Vedanta Sutra. And he's now going to start explaining to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, you know, how to have a better and a more appropriate direct understanding of the Shastras. And this verse here is really important. And it starts with these words, Brahma Shabde, by the word Brahman. And how is that used in the Vedanta Sutras? And what Lord Chaitanya is making the case that the word Brahman, whenever it appears in the sutras, it indicates Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. And he is saying that is the verdict of all Vedic literature. Vaidaisya sarve araham eva vedya, that you have to appreciate how the Vedanta Sutra is presenting a summary. It is Vedanta. It is the conclusions of the Vedas, particularly of the Shrutis, of the Upanishads. And it is giving the complete understanding. And you have to understand the sutras in the context of all the Upanishads and all the Shastras, and trying to give some interpretation which is selective and which is partial. That is the fault of the impersonalists. They tend to want to be selective. A couple of weeks ago, I was discussing this with Garuda Prabhu, one of the top devotee theologians in our movement, and he was mentioning how when he studied at Harvard, and he was working with one of the top Sanskrit professors, and they happened to be looking at a commentary by Shankara, and they were studying the Gita, and it was very telling that in one particular verse of Yukta Vyukta Mak Apanam, where Krishna says that unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, was impersonal before and have now assumed this personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. Pretty clear message from the Gita. And Shankara does not make any comment on that verse. He is doing a commentary on the whole Gita, but when he comes to this verse, he leaves it alone. There's nothing to be said. Even he did not want to interfere and try and twist such straightforward statement within the Shastras. And Srila Prabhupada also mentions that Shankara was also very cautious not to comment on the Srimad Bhagavatam, because that would just have ended up becoming offensive for him. So the ultimate object of all Vedic literature is Krishna. All the Vedic literature reveals him. And Jiva Goswami does a really nice little analysis of this in his Sarva Sangvadini, particularly to the Bhagavat Sandarbha. And he starts off by, he goes through all the Vedic scriptures. He starts off saying there's two types of Vedas. And he's talking here, the Rig, Sama, Yajur, and Atharva, as mentioned in this purport. And he says, really, they're in two sections, the mantra bits, which is usually the Samhitas, and the Brahmins. And the Brahmanas, that's the text, Brahmanas, and that includes the Aranyakas and the Upanishads. So the two types of mantras, some of them praise Bhagavan directly, and of course, well, that's fine, they're very clear, Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam. They are worshipping Krishna directly. But many others of the mantras are aimed at the devas, the demigods. But as Jiva explains, actually, because the devas are servants of Krishna, then really all of these are indicating a relationship with their master, Bhagavan. So Krishna, being the absolute truth, is the source of all other beings, including all these devas who are praised within the Vedas. And then of the Brahmanas, well, you know, as I said, often these are split into three, Brahmanas, the Aranyakas, and the Upanishads. But Jiva Goswami kind of looks at them as a total and says, well, they basically have three purposes, Karmakanda, Upasanakanda, and Gyanakanda. The Karmakanda sections seem to be encouraging people to do yajnas, to perform good pious activities, to satisfy the devas, and in that way, you know, enjoy kind of good karma during their human life, and also perhaps have a better destination for their next life, go to the heavenly planets or something. But Jiva Goswami explains that, yes, but everyone knows that karma is insentient. Karma itself does not give the results. You know, we may talk about it being a kind of law of nature, but who is behind that law of nature? Ultimately, it is Bhagavan Sri Krishna who gives all the results of karma. So you cannot have karma kanda without understanding that there is an ultimate relationship with the Supreme Being, Krishna. And upasana kanda is the same as we mentioned earlier. Much of this is worship of the devas. But you cannot have worship of the devas until you understand who they relate to and who is the ultimate beneficiary of all blessings and benedictions that come through upasana, and that is Sri Krishna. And then there's the Gyanakand, which is to do with knowledge. And there's two kind of aspects to Gyanakand. And they appear to be two aspects, but what this verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and what Jiva Goswami explains is that they ultimately are one, because there's knowledge of Brahman and there's knowledge of Bhagavan. It seems to people that they are offering two different kind of objects of knowledge, but they are one entity. Bhagavan and Brahman are one entity. And we'll unpack that a little bit more. And whenever the Shrutis, whether it's the Vedas, whether it's Upanishads, talk about Brahman, it indicates the Supreme Personality of Krishna, of Godhead Krishna. So it's Jiva Goswami explains that, therefore, when we really talk about Jnana Kand and Jnana, because that is knowledge of both Brahman and Bhagavan together, really this contains the element of bhakti. So jnana cannot be understood to be just knowledge. It is knowledge and bhakti together. And that's why Prabhupada quotes this particular verse from the Gita, you know, bahunam janmanamante, that, you know, after many, many births, jnanavam, you know, one actually achieves knowledge, mambrapajate, and surrenders unto me, knowing vasudev sarvam, that vasudev is everything. And that's a very great, rare soul, sahamahatma. Samahatma Sadurla Baha. And then he uses these other verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam to explain that particularly the second verse, Dharma Svanushtita Pungsa, that even if you perform Dharma Svanushtita, which is according to your own kind of constitution and your responsibilities, and you do that perfectly, that's kind of the karma can sort of, it's of no use if it doesn't bring you to the position of Vishwaksena Katasu means hearing the messages related to Krishna. Not pariyad yati ritim. It has to, if it doesn't invoke attachment in your heart to hearing those messages, then Prabhupada says, shrama evi kevalam, simply wasting your time. And it is of no value. So all the karma, the upasana, and the jnanakans, they're all ultimately trying to link you with Krishna, and ultimately it is only by devotion to Krishna that there is any success as far as the Vedas are concerned. So jnana in that verse, in the previous verse, brings janayat yashu vairag, it brings vairagya, bhakti brings vairagya, and brings jnanam, which is knowledge, which is causeless, ahoitakam. So there are other scriptures, and Prabhupada talks that we're not just talking the four Vedas. That's not just Vedic literature. Even in our fourth offense, we go shastra, shruti shastra nindanam. Shruti is those texts which are heard, which includes the Vedas and Upanishads, etc. But Shastra opens that up, and we therefore say the offence is to blame, to blaspheme Vedic literature or literature in pursuance of the Vedic version. And Prabhupada gives a nice explanation of that in this purport. So what about all these other literatures in pursuance of the Vedic version? Do they also reveal Krishna? Well, according to Jiva Goswami, yes, they do. And he goes through the different Vedangas. The Vedangas are the limbs of the Vedas which help those who are practitioners how to chant, how to understand the Shastras. So they deal with Shiksha, which is pronunciation, Kalpa, which is the various rules for doing the different ceremonies, Vyakaran, which is grammar, so that you can understand how these work, and particularly the Nirukta, the meaning of each of the words, and the Chandas, how the meters in which to chant the mantras, because if you chant them nicely, you'll remember them, and also you will get the full benefit of the potency of those mantras. And Jyotish, which is the kind of astronomical studies, which allows you to calculate the times for performances of Krishna ceremonies. So as far as Jiva is concerned, all these Vedangas are simply to help you because they give you methods for worshipping Krishna. Therefore, they're related directly in bhakti. And then there's the Upavedas. These are the Upa means close to. So these are very, they're not exactly the Vedas, but they're corollaries. And they include the Alankaras, the Kama, Tantras, the Gandharva, which apparently, the way Jiva describes those is each of those, seems to be talking about art and things of this world. But what they do is offer a vision of the sweetness of Krishna's pastimes. And therefore, they can be seen as helpful and indirectly bringing us to this point of bhakti. There's the Niti Shastras, like the Manu Sanhita, which obviously are codes for human society, which is all helpful. We want a good, sensible, law-abiding society where people are living according to Dharma, and that was a very good foundation for having a world enlivened in Krishna consciousness. The Shilpa arts, the crafts, which they have their perfection when they are utilized in the service of Krishna. And similarly with Ayurveda and Dhanurveda, which are very, probably the type of Upavedas that we're most familiar with, they conclude in Krishna, because without Krishna, the practices and the ideas of both Ayurveda and Dhanaveda are said to be useless. And then, besides the actual scriptures, there's the various schools of thought, the Saddarshans, and Jiva Goswami goes through them and start to show, actually, they also reveal Krishna as Bhagavan, and they get you away from this idea that all the Vedas are talking about Brahman, but no, Brahman is Krishna. That is the key point that is being made here. So even Gotama's Nyaya, which is the school of logic, and Kanada's Vaisheshika, the kind of atom theory of matter, and Kapila's Sankhya. Now this is Kapila, the atheist Kapila, who wrote the Sankhya Karikas, and it's the analysis of the elements of this world according to the way Sankhya models them. So how do they reveal Krishna? How do they kind of establish Krishna as Bhagavan? And Jiva Goswami explains that each of them actually, in whatever philosophy and perspective of how to look at this world and what it is and why it's here, ultimately they come up with a picture that requires them to accept that there must be some absolute source. There must be a supreme entity behind all of this. There has to be the material world and there has to be the spiritual categories. So ultimately, even though they are, many people just look at them as ways of analyzing the physical reality, when you look at the totality of what they're saying, they are describing a bigger picture of reality, both the material sphere and that there is a basis of reality that underpins the material reality. That's the spiritual nature, which you might say is Brahman. But beyond Brahman, there is the supreme entity, Krishna, who is the source of Brahman and all its manifestations of this world. So in many ways, what they do is to establish Krishna in an indirect way through kind of a sort of argument of logical necessity, i.e. that their ideas only work if the absolute truth is Krishna. So that's how Jiva Goswami takes that. Then he talks about Patanjali and Patanjali's yoga system, particularly as it's, and of course, which is then encoded in the Yoga Sutra. And that's actually pretty blatant. You know, many people, you know, we know that there are many people who are interested in yoga who feel that they are followers of Patanjali, but have no idea of Krishna. Their teacher down at the local gym and leisure center is not providing that sort of perspective of the Yoga Sutras. They're just interested in the asanas. But the Yoga Sutras take you through a whole kind of philosophical and metaphysical understanding of why yoga works, what it's all about, and it is pretty blatant. It starts the first chapter, the Samadhi Pad, starts and explains how this process of yoga will take you beyond the stage of what's called sampragata, state of meditation and consciousness. It will take you to that state where you understand, I am not this body, I am connected with the whole of reality. And after it explains what that is, it then says, Ishvara Pranidhanad Va, which basically means, you know, I'm giving you this whole process. And by that you will realize that you are beyond matter, that you are a spiritual entity, that you are part of the ultimate reality. And you can do it through this method, or Ishvara Pranidhanad Va. Va is usually taken as or. So Patanjali is saying, or you can just worship Krishna. That's how you can get there. But actually, va can also be understood as indeed. And when you start looking at some of the other texts later in the Yoga Sutras, you'll see that Actually, he's not saying it as an or, that you can do yoga or you can do Ishvara, you know, dedication and worship of Krishna. No. It's actually indeed that only by worship of Krishna will you get these results of reaching beyond the Sampragata stage of meditation. And he follows that up in several other texts. When he starts the sadhana pad, which is the second chapter, he starts by explaining what's called Kriya Yoga. And he says there are three elements of Kriya Yoga: tapa, austerities; svadhyay, which generally means study or personal, you know, examination of oneself through the eyes of Shastra. And the third one, Ishvara Pranidhanani, that is the process for Kriya Yoga. Okay, once it brings it up again, when he goes through the yamas and the niyamas, in the last one of the niyamas, which are the personal disciplines that one has to practice, which one has to establish before one can even think of asana and pranayama and etc. So the last one of them is Ishvara Pranidhanani. Back again, you know, that you're not going to make any further progress unless you are surrendered to Krishna. And then, having explained the many of the limbs, and talking about this will bring you to samadhi, and this will enable, you know, there will be perfection, siddhis that will come from this. He then says, samadhi siddhir Ishvara Pranidhanat, which basically means that you will only be able to, it doesn't mean that by worshipping Krishna you will get samadhi and siddhis. It doesn't mean that you will get the perfection of your meditation, complete absorption, or the mystic powers and things and other kind of aspects. No, what this is saying, it is because of, Pranidhanat means because of, these of dedication to Krishna, you can get samadhi and siddhir. So the worship of Krishna is not a result of the yoga practice. Worship of Krishna is needed to give you the benefits of the yoga practice. So no question there. Krishna is clearly at the heart of what Patanjali is saying. And then he moves to the Mimamsas. There's two Mimamsas: the Purva Mimamsa, which is the philosophy of Jaimini, again tries to explain that really karma is the only thing. You know, so many people take it that this seems to be a bit of an atheist kind of analysis, that you know, you just do your karma and karma is a law and therefore you get the result. But no, it has to conclude in Bhagavan, you know, as the Gita says, yogyartha karma no nyatra, that only when your activities are dedicated to Krishna, to yogya, only then do they kind of give you the benefit of ultimate liberation and devotion to Krishna. So Purva Mimamsa, again, by logical necessity, requires Krishna behind it, in the same way as Sankhya does, because neither karma nor an atheistic analysis of the material world explains why the material world is here and what to do about it. And neither, if you just have a physicalist idea that this world is here, works by its laws, it's ever existing, there's no need to speculate anything beyond it, you cannot explain all the whys and wherefores of the existence of the complexity and the nature of this world. That was a problem way back for the Sadarshan sages. It's a problem for the modern scientists and the physicists. They still can't, although they look at the different laws that are working within physics and try to explain the world is here and why it might be here, they ultimately cannot deal with the questions of origins. What is there at the start of everything? Why is everything produced in this way? What is the information that is providing the complexity and the systems and the laws by which everything work? That cannot be explained. And therefore, even Sankhya and Karma Mimamsa and even modern physics require to postulate the existence of a Supreme Personality of Godhead for their theories to work. But then there's the Uttara Mimamsa, and that is that's Vedanta. This is Vyasa's compilation and codification of the philosophical statements of the Vedas. Particularly, he's taking the Upanishads. Basically, he's going through all the Upanishads. He's looking at all the important texts. He's looking at all the different issues that are raised within the Upanishads. And he's bringing them together and breaking them down bit by bit by bit to show that actually these all relate to Krishna. Now, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is obviously a student of the Vedanta, and he hasn't got that. He hasn't picked up on that one. So somehow or other, he has managed to read the Vedanta Sutra and get a completely different take on what the Vedanta is saying, and therefore what the Upanishads are taking. And that is because he follows in a Shankara tradition, and there are many, actually, there are plenty of impersonalist traditions. And I think it's important to understand that the Vedas and the teaching of the Vedas is what's called a Bhashya tradition. That means that we as ordinary people rely on the teachers of the tradition to explain these texts and their meanings and the overall big picture to which they belong. We require that to be explained to us in order to get the message. And unfortunately, there are certain Bhashya traditions which want to believe that there is no personality of Godhead. They want to believe that they are one with Brahman, that on their liberation, they will merge and become ecstatically one with God, and in that way have escaped material existence and established themselves in what they believe is their rightful position, that they are the Supreme themselves. There's a motivation there, and therefore that motivation feeds into how they interpret the texts, how they talk about them. And basically what they do is they create this, echo chamber. It's very popular to talk about the effects of social media as the modern kind of echo chambers where, people are in chat rooms where they're really just talking to people of like-minded ideas and just reinforcing them. And some of these Bhashya traditions tend to do that and not see the bigger picture. Now, of course, we are another Bhashya tradition, but the Vaishnav tradition actually has many very important teachers involved and different sampradayas, which all point in the same direction. And Ramanujacharya, Madhavacharya, Nimbarka, Vishnu Swami, Sridhar, these all have done bhashyas on Vedanta and revealed Krishna through them, because they say, don't just look at some of those Upanishads, the ones that you like. You've got to read them with the others that seem to be contradictory. And that's the problem that many people have with the Upanishads. They appear to be contradictory. In one side, it says, oh, Brahman is nirguna, has no qualities. Another side, no, he has as Prabhupada quoted here, he has transcendental eyes and mind, and he has limbs everywhere. And so there seems to be contradictions in that. And it's a contradiction if you're trying to resolve everything back to just being formless Brahman. But if you accept that Brahman and Bhagavan are the one entity, and that Bhagavan can have qualities, transcendental qualities, but at the same time is Bhagavan and Brahman have no material qualities, then it's all resolved. And I'm going to kind of we'll look a little bit more at Brahman and Bhagavan and the relationship with them in a moment. So our traditions, whatever tradition you have, they take the Upanishads as being the evidence. You know, everything has to relate to that. But the Vaishnava position is, yeah, but you have to look at all of them. Don't just cherry pick the ones you like. We need to look at them all and understand how they are all consistent. They are all giving the same message. Once you understand that Brahma Shabde, this word Brahma, refers to Bhagavan Krishna. So, Prabhupada says here, yeah, but it doesn't seem that Krishna is directly mentioned. What does he say in the purport? A person may think that there is no direct statement about Krishna in the Upanishads. But unfortunately, the Vedic mantras are not understood by people with mundane senses. And really that means the point that when an individual has motivations other than to be open-hearted and willing to surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when they want to just establish their own self-importance or their own self-benefit of achievement in this world or liberation into oneness, then they're not going to understand, they're not going to see Krishna. So let's have a little look at what the Vedanta indicates. Now, the Upanishads reveal Bhagavan, and the Vedanta Sutra itself begins with begins by stating that its subject matter is Brahman, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. The word Atato indicates kind of when, and so when does this inquiry into Brahman begin? Now, often we say, well, it's to do with when one has a human birth. Now that we've got this human birth, we should start to inquire about Krishna. And other acharyas say, well, I think even the impersonalists take it that really once someone has gone beyond karma and upasana, you know, they've done the karma bit of this world, and now they're ready for Gyan. That's when they should begin the study of Vedanta. Baladev Bijabhusan, who is has done the Govinda Bhashya, which is the presentation of the Vedanta Sutra that belongs to the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. We have the Madhava and the Ramanuja and many other bhashyas of Vedanta, but particularly the Gaudiya Vaishnava stemming from Lord Chaitanya have their one, which is the Govinda Bhashya by Baladev Vijayabhusan. And Prabhupada, in dedication of the his translation of the Bhagavad Gita, dedicated to Baladev Vijayabhusan because he has presented Govinda Bhashya so nicely. So Baladev's point is that Atato really means now that you are you've taken up devotional service, now that you're in the association of devotees, now that you're under the guidance of a Vaishnava spiritual teacher, now you can begin your study of Vedanta because you're going to get a chance to understand it. You're not going to get it just because you're a human or you're beyond karma. You only really should begin the study of Vedanta in the association of devotees under the guidance of a Vaishnav teacher. And then, I'm here to study Brahman. What is Brahman? And that leads on to the second sutra. Janma Adyasya Yataha. Janma means creation. And Adi means, and the other ones that come with it, creation, maintenance, and destruction. So those three things of the material world. Asya refers to all the creatures, from the devas down to the little ants, all the creatures that are part of this world and the universe itself, so everything in this world. So Brahman is Yataha, that from which all this creation, maintenance, destruction of this universe comes from. Now, I remember feeling in the past, that's rather interesting, but that's, here we are talking about Brahma. That's the great, that is the great reality that is beyond everything. You know, it seems a little odd for the Vedanta Sutra to kind of limit it or to define Brahman in relationship to something which is material, a material object, i.e. the material universes. That just seems, you would think it would have a more spiritual definition. But no, it's been defined that the absolute truth, Brahman, is that from which maintenance, creation, creation, maintenance and destruction come, and this whole universe comes from. Now, it's actually very, very clever, because what it does, it indicates that we have to understand Brahman is not part of this material world, that there is a reality which is beyond all of this and which is the source of all of this. So it is defining a spiritual reality. It is defining an ultimate absolute source of all existence. And it defeats the idea that any material process will get you there, because you're having to connect with something that's beyond anything that's in this material world, including all the processes of karma, jnana, material jnana, and passing of the devas. It's not going to get you there. And so it indicates that the goal of spiritual life is beyond the material. But it also does something really interesting, which is related to this particular verse that we've just had. It defeats the Advaita philosophy. Because for Brahman to be the source of Janma and, of creation and of the universe, Brahman must also possess qualities. It must have abilities or powers called shaktis. There must be some ability within Brahman to create this universe. Now, the impersonalists sometimes say, well, this universe is mithya. It is false. That's Shankara's statement, Jagat Mithya, Brahma Satyam, that Brahmanya may be true, but the universe is false. But even to create a false experience or a sense of illusion requires Brahman to have qualities and shaktis. So this verse is saying that Brahman which has shakti, which has powers, which has the ability to create, to do all these things, that is the absolute truth. Now, this is Jiva's argument, that the Brahman with qualities and shaktis actually is better referred to as Bhagavan, because Bhagavan has Swarup Shakti. Bhagavan is that entity which possesses shaktis, whereas Brahman, in its impersonal form, does not manifest shaktis. And he gives a simple example, and we need to be careful thinking of it, of Brahman and Bhagavan materially, but he gives the example that Brahman is almost more like the material stuff, whereas Bhagavan, like clay, and Bhagavan is the potter with potency, with the ability to take the clay and make something of it. So Brahman cannot be formless. It cannot just be without any qualities whatsoever, just universe, you know, ultimate oneness. No, there has to be potency in there. And as soon as you talk about potency, who is in charge of that potency? Who is guiding it? Is it sentient? Who is the personality behind all of that? That is Bhagavan. Therefore, when the Brahma Sutra defines Brahman as Janmajasya Yataha, it can only mean that Brahman means Bhagavan. That's the kind of analysis of that. So that particular verse clarifies three kind of key things. The absolute truth is not material, it's beyond prakriti. That the absolute truth possesses Swarup Shakti, its own potency. And therefore, it is Bhagavan, because Brahman is not defined itself with Shaktis. Only Bhagavan as Brahman has Shaktis. Again, it also defeats this idea that the impersonalists bring up, that the absolute truth is not the jiva, because that which is beyond, only that which is beyond material existence can give liberation from material existence. Therefore, Brahman is not the jiva. It's not referring there, it's referring to Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who gives liberation, Mukunda, who gives that liberation to all the jivas, who can then enjoy the variegated qualities of spiritual world in the Vaikuntas and in Goloka and in the pastimes with Krishna and all his devotees. So this kind of, so then the Brahma Sutra Vedanta says, okay, so where do we get all this knowledge from? And that is the verse that is quoted here in the purport, Shastra Yonatvat, that it is from the source of Shastra that you get all that information. It is not from reasoning. It is not from logic. It is not from any material process. It's not from any intellectual process. You will get ultimate knowledge from the Shastra. So the difficulty is, as Prabhupada quotes in the previous chapter, that it is, you know, Supreme Personality of Godhead is Vedeshu Durlabham. He says untraceable, Durlabham, very hard to find in the Vedas. But when the Vedas are properly understood, or when Vedic knowledge is received from devotees, one can understand that all Vedic knowledge leads to Krishna. And that's why then he talks about the in this verse, in these two paragraphs, he talks about the other literatures which help to explain the Upanishads and Vedanta. So again, Jiva Goswami does a very interesting analysis of this in the Tattva Sandarbha. And he starts by saying the thing that all sages of whatever tradition want to hear, that Shruti is the evidence. The statements of the Upanishads, that's what we have to accept as is unviable, you know. However, the Vedanta is the codifying of all that Upanishadic knowledge. It takes all the Upanishads and explains what they mean. That's fine, but still sutras are hard. They're short, pithy statements. And when you read Vedanta Sutra, it's a you have to understand the verses from the Upanishads that each sutra is really unpacking and referring to, and what questions regarding those Upanishad texts that the sutra is refuting or dealing with. And that leaves a little scope for persons like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to get in there and to give his analysis of it. Now, it's still twisted because Vedanta, even though this is quite difficult stuff, Vedanta is still pretty clear. And Baladev Bijibhushan gives an incredible analysis. You know, he goes through so many words that seem to relate to the absolute truth, not just Brahma, but the word Atma. Of course, the word Atma means soul, but it also means the supreme soul. And we use the same word for Atma, Paramatma, for Krishna, as Jivatma, the little kind of Atma, us, we qualify the word Atma. But when the Vedanta is using the word Atma, it's referring to Bhagavan. But someone might say, well, but yeah, but maybe Atma in this case might mean the Jiva. No, because it's describing qualities which do not exist in the Jiva. For instance, as the giver of liberation, that cannot refer to the Jiva, because the Jiva is the thing that needs the benediction of liberation. It is not the giver of liberation. So if the word Atma is used in the context of giving liberation, you have to understand that that Atma means Bhagavan, means Krishna. And, you know, all that type of analysis can be done. The impersonalists, unfortunately, just want to be selective, want to try and get the message that they want. So, Vyas understanding that even Vedanta is going to be problematic, particularly going into Kali Yuga, thought, I need to do the Puranas. And the many Vedic scholars, you know, and big Sanskritists, they kind of regard the Puranas as, yeah, that's for the, you know, the kids and the women and the, you know, common men, you know. You know, it's not for us Brahmins and, you know, smart people. No. Jiva Goswami explains, yeah, okay, the Upanishads may be the source of evidence. The Vedanta may be the brilliant clarification of the Upanishads. But actually, all of us need the Puranas to understand the Vedanta and the Upanishads. Therefore, the Puranas are actually more important. They're not saying they're higher evidence, but they're saying they're more important for all of us, because it's through the Puranas that we're going to understand Vedanta. And then Vyas did the Itihasas, the histories, Ramayana, the original Valmiki Ramayana, as it's mentioned here, it's accepted as a Vedic literature, than the Mahabharata, which of course includes the Bhagavad Gita. So these Itihasas also reveal the messages of Vedanta and very clearly establish Bhagavan as the goal of our existence. And we know that from the early part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that Vyas, having compiled the great work, the Mahabharata, still felt dissatisfied and took guidance from his spiritual master, Narad Muni, who said, no, you've done an awful lot, but still, you know, people can wriggle and get out of it and miss the point. Time to write the most unequivocal Shastra that unequivocally takes the Upanishads, takes Vedanta, and spells out that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that work, of course, is the Srimad Bhagavatam, which starts with the same words. Janmadisha Yataha, the same words as Vedanta, because it is Vyasadeva's natural commentary on Vedanta. And it begins with the invocation, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, that I am taking shelter and offering my obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, the son of Vasudeva. And he is the Janmadishyataha. He is the entity, the personality from which everything else comes. So we've been given the Srimad Bhagavatam and we are following in the footsteps of our acharyas, not just all the great acharyas of our line, and how the Chaitanya Charitamrita has taken the Srimad Bhagavatam, explained it, and how Lord Chaitanya has demonstrated the perfection of bhakti within the message of the Bhagavatam and through his life. And, of course, in the Sampradaya and the Parampara that have descended from Lord Chaitanya down to our own Srila Prabhupada, and the purports that he is providing both in Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, we are so utterly blessed to have this sort of
clarity of presentation that Prabhupada is giving. Even then, you know, it sometimes looks difficult to us. But if we study it in the association of devotees under the guidance of our spiritual teachers, actually all these messages of the Bhagavatam will become clear to us. And we need to know that we actually are recipients of the full message of all Vedic literatures. We've been blessed in that way. Hare Krishna. So I think we've got time for a few questions.
Thank you so much, Prabhu, for sharing your vast knowledge with us. It was really very enthusing to listen to you, and I think we could have gone on way longer. You really will enhance our Swadhyaya so that we can be even more enthusiastic in our Sankirtan. Like you were mentioning, that is our true mission. So we have quite some questions. One question we could go first with, which you could maybe go on briefly about, because I think you already discussed it a little bit, is Hare Krishna, in Isha Upanishad, it is stated, realization of impersonal Brahman or Paramatma, the super soul, is incomplete realization of the absolute complete. Why here the word Brahman indicates the complete supreme personality of Godhead? What is the difference?
Yes, this is something that I hoped I was covering, but perhaps only in brief, when I mentioned that Bhagavan is the Supreme Personality, is the Absolute Truth as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the possessor of all incredible qualities and also all powers, and who is the sentient entity, you know, responsible for all the rest of existence. And Brahman is Krishna. There's no difference. But it is Krishna when people are relating to Krishna, not as the personality with all his powers, but actually just with as the kind of impersonal energy that is manifest from Krishna. So that is the particular difference there. In one sense, there is no difference, but one is Brahman with Shakti, Krishna, and one is Brahman not manifesting Shaktis. And so if you want to, you've got the choice. You can either relate to that personality with his all his powers, or you can just relate to his energy. And Prabhupada gives the example that, you know, you can, say, a big businessman. You can relate to him just through his business. That's his impersonal energy. Or you can get to know him personally and understand who is this entity behind all of this incredible activity.
Thank you. Yeah. Then we have one question from Harika Mataji. She says, Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Dandat Pranams. How do we develop attachment for Krishna in the heart? And how do we sincerely surrender without holding back?
I think we need to go to that verse, Vasudeva Bhagavati, that by engaging Vasudeva Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga Prayojita, by engaging, we just have to engage in devotional service. We do so initially without knowing that we're not there with full heart and fully dedicated to it, but we engage in it. And by engaging in it, janayat yashu, ashu means very quickly, you will get some knowledge. And that will inspire you to engage in it a little bit more. You'll get some more knowledge and you get some more detachment, some vairagya, and it'll just keep on building and building and building. And so it is a gradual process. And as with everything, the more we put into it, the more we're going to get out of it, the quicker the results will come. But there's no magic thing. It's just something we have to do. And we can only go as far as and as quickly as our heart will do it. But if we take the association of devotees, we will find ourselves inspired more and more to engage in it. And we will consider the the qualities we see in other devotees and think, well, actually, that's really nice. And those qualities are yours. They can be there for everyone. There's no qualities in any devotee that you can't aspire and achieve, because they're the natural qualities that you will manifest with devotional service.
Ah, wonderful. That's inspiring. We have a question from Anna Maria Mataji. She asks, Hare Krishna, thank you for summarizing in such a brilliant and simple way the Yoga Sutras and highlighting the very important message, which is to surrender to Krishna in order to achieve real pure liberation, samadhi. I've read a few Vedic books, such as Yoga Sutras, and didn't get this very important message, but rather was meditating on the impersonal aiming to achieve samadhi until I came to Krishna consciousness. How could I, as a yoga teacher, ensure that I tie this very important message to students interested to go deeper than asana poses and discourage meditation on the impersonal in an easy to churn way? Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important to understand the different levels that the Yoga Sutra presents. It does present the sutras in a way that, you know, people can just take at face value. And then there's certain statements which are so blatant, like the ones that I mentioned, where Ishvara Pranadhana is absolutely required. And I think that the same message that we talked about within this purport is that no one should be selective. You know, you shouldn't take the Yoga Sutras, only 195 verses, I think. You know, it's not a big text. You might as well take them all, you know. And I think the way to do it is, with yoga classes, is to include maybe a little bit of study of the Yoga Sutras, because, you know, the Ashtanga Yoga bit is tiny within the, you know, I think it's within 20 verses, the whole of the Ashtanga process is covered out of nearly 200 verses. So, you know, it's about a tenth, you know, of the Yoga Sutras actually gives you all of the Ashtanga process. But all the philosophy and the metaphysics and the consciousness aspects of it and the overall picture of our relationship with Krishna is missing. And Garuda Prabhu, I think, is doing a really good job. He has invited a kind of very small team to study with him and to kind of, we look at a few verses of the Yoga Sutras every week and really try to go deep into what the message is there. I'm hoping that his publication will help many of the yoga teachers. You could connect with his website and see, because he does other classes, and you could connect with him. And I think he would be a very good source for any yoga teacher wanting to understand the bhakti message that is absolutely blatant in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras.
Thank you, Prabhu. This is helpful, I think, also for Mataji. So we have one more question here from Vishal Prabhu. He asks, how can we establish the authority of the Vedas in the modern scientific world and other fields?
Yes, that's a good question. I work with the BI, the Bhaktivedanta Institute. We have a little team here in the UK, and also I'm part of the BIHS, Bhaktivedanta Institute for Higher Studies in Gainesville. So that is a very interesting question, you know, that's always on our minds. How do we establish the Vedic kind of authority for commenting on various aspects? My particular field on that is that the subject matter of consciousness. That consciousness is the Achilles heel of all the physicists, neuroscientists, biologists. No one can deal with it. Science cannot deal with consciousness. It can't explain it. It can't understand. It can't even study it. But it knows it's there. You know, it can't ignore it, but it can study it. and it can't incorporate it within its own theories. So all science is incomplete. And so I personally find that as my kind of entry point with philosophers and academics and scientists, that we need to discuss consciousness, and particularly because the Vedic tradition, and you know, both the Vedanta and the Yoga and the Sankhya traditions, the particularly the Vaishnava Sankhya traditions, have all a lot to say on consciousness. And actually, we try to present that in a way that shows its relevance to the questions that people are asking in physics, in biology, in neuroscience. And if you want more on that, you can always go on YouTube and type in Atma Paradigm, and you'll get a few lectures on that one. But we're trying to do more, and this might be inspiring to you. We're working with groups of devotee scientists, PhD scientists in the various universities, working on experiments within neuroscience to show how our model of consciousness, the mind and its different features, Ahankara, Buddhi, Mana, relate to the brain, and how we can do experiments and actually show applications of this model dealing with some of the big issues in neuroscience, neurology. We're looking at the mind-machine prosthetics issues and showing that we have something really interesting to offer. So I think there's three things. One, to offer a theory, that's always good. To offer a usable model that others can use in their theories is very good. To show that there is experimentation that you can do to demonstrate certain aspects of the Vedic point is brilliant. And further, we're trying to offer applications of the Vedic model for science. So big process, slow work, but there's a lot of enthusiasm amongst devotees. And if anyone has a scientific interest, they can always get in touch, and we may be able to link them into some of these projects. Thank you very much.